America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We are back in your lives. This is another episode of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. I'm joined every single week by Chris Algieri. Apologize for the episode coming out one day late. I was a little bit under the weather, but I am good now. I am feeling great. It's a nice sunny day in New York City. Got my Knicks hat on. The Knicks are in the Eastern Conference Finals. Yankees are beating up on the Mets. Life is good, man. Boxing world buzzing. Chris, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. You just made me happy with all that New York positivity going on right now. The weather's changing this time of year. It's about to be like my favorite time there. It is just gotten to the point of the season of hell here in Florida. It is non-stop, just oppressive heat, and it's going to be like this till September. So I might be coming up to New York more often than not when I have a chance.
You got to come to New York, man. People want to it's not too close. The July 12th show in Queens. I'm trying to look for another meetup. I'm trying to plan another Inside Boxing Live meetup. It's been way too long.
It's been 2 years,
asked about
bro.
It. I know.
People ask. People still ask.
Think about how much bigger it would be, because Ben, we were just getting our footing as a podcast. We're just getting into our groove.
We were fledgling then. Now we are a bona fide force. Bona fide force in the podcasting world.
We didn't even have PPV.com behind us, which is our beautiful presenting sponsor. And go to them this summer when we have some big fights coming up. Tank Roach 2. We have Fundora Zoo 2. Manny Pacquiao. Did you see videos of him hitting the mitts with Freddie Roach in Wild Card? Those were not old videos. They were not in black and white. Those were in color. Manny Pacquiao is in L.A. training with Freddie Roach.
Dude, I fought Manny when he was with Freddie. Like, it was like, so this is like very nostalgic for me. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? I mean, he looks a lot different. Don't get me wrong.
His face, man. He's got some serious scar tissue on his face.
I mean, yeah. I mean, all the years, all the fights. He's got, what does he have, 70 plus fights?
Yeah, right?
63. Yeah, he's got 70 plus fights. He had some wicked cuts over those eyebrows. And he's in his mid-40s, dude. It's boxers don't tend to age well, and but he's back.
46 Man. Years old. 46. What's his record? I'm pretty sure he has over 70, and I think that Canelo is going to retire, if everything goes to plan, is going to retire with close to 70 fights. And that's like rarefied air. How many fighters have 70, like not elite level? Because you can find those guys, you know, the journeyman, or you can find someone that, you know, just fights like once a week for like 10 years. But like, I'm talking elite level, 70 fights, 60 win club. I would like to see who's in that.
Not in this era. It's very rare. Bro, I didn't even have 30 fights. I have 29 fights. Like,
I remember looking at your record being like, damn, that's good. But you got a late start.
Very late, yeah, very late. And I had a lot of start and stops because of promotions and injuries and
Litigation. He has 72
fights. And a
pandemic.
Pandemic was in there.
72 fights.
72.
This will be his 73rd fight. And thank you for watching on PPV.com. Live interactive chat. We're going to be heading out to Vegas in July and August. Maybe some other ones mixed in there as well. David Benavidez is looking to get into the mix in November or October. Nice. Yeah, a lot of good things going on. Wasn't the biggest fight weekend we're coming off of. Dave Allen, Johnny Fisher, domestic scrap dust up over in the UK. It looked like your classic. I don't even know what to call it. Just like mid level journeyman.
Well, I think domestic dust up is a perfect explanation description of what that was. People are into it. It looked like it was a fun fight. Two guys who are noteworthy over there, but not worldwide. And the fans come out, man. The British fan base, man. British boxing
Copper
is
box.
So awesome, man. It is so awesome. We love you guys, by the way. If we have any British
oh, we have a lot, dude.
That's great because we are, I mean, I as a fight fan, as a broadcast, as a fighter, I love the British fans. The way that they respond to their fighters is amazing.
The Brits and the Mexicans keeping the sport afloat.
Yep.
Keeping the sport afloat. I remember at John Boy that we had a guy, he just did analytics all day long. He analyzed YouTube, social media. He gave us a savant, Lucas Diversa. Lucas Diversa shout out on Inside Boxing Live. And he came to me and was like, I should let you know that Inside Boxing Live has the most international listeners of any podcast here at John Boy. I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, that makes sense.
International. This is an international sport. He's like, yeah, you have like so many like listeners in the UK. Like, yeah. Well, yeah, it's a huge sport over there. It's a small country, and they love soccer, and they love darts, and they love boxing. Darts. And they love beer.
I'm actually pretty good at darts. We should play darts.
You know that Eddie Hearn, you know his dad, like made their fortune with darts,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yes. This is a dart tournament network, right?
Yeah, and they brought it over here. There's that guy, Luke Littler, I believe his name is. He's like a dart prodigy.
Got to drink a lot of pints to be good at darts.
I was going to say, he's not even 21. I feel like that guy, Luke. And he must be asked to constantly hang out at bars.
Yeah, but
he shows up at a bar. He's the fucking man. Just
drinking age got to be different over there, though. I think isn't it 18 in the UK?
I believe so.
Yeah, so he's got 3 years of season drinking under his belt legally. Because you can't be good at darts if you don't drink.
When did you start drinking in like 16, 17?
Ask Ricky Hatton.
Ricky Fatton. Yeah.
Actually,
in the woods?
I mean, my family, like we had a much more European approach to it. Like we would have like wine and little sips of beer when we were younger. It wasn't taboo in my house at all. Like we were
in the woods drinking Smirnoff Ices.
We weren't really like that. We didn't have.
Sorry, Dad.
My mother was very very European in the way that she acted in terms of that kind of stuff. Very laissez faire. What do what you guys want?
That's the way to do it because if you make it taboo, then you feel like you want to do it more. That's why I was in the woods chugging Smirnoff Ices.
That's the problem with American teenage drinking.
They slap you. The parent. I'm a parent. I'm gonna say drink here, guys. Maybe not. I don't know what the path we're going down. Let's get on track here, Chris. Let's get on track. Yeah, let's really, talk we're boxing. We're all over the place. It's fine. That's okay. Wait, before we get into boxing, since we're all over the place, bro, I watched a documentary last night, Manhunt for Bin Laden on Netflix.
Oh, that's in my queue. Is it good?
Bro, 10 out of 10. I already tweeted about it. I mean, we all know how it ends. I was captivated. Yep. Spoiler alert. We fucking chewed him in the face. But the way how they got to it, it was never seen. It was a bunch of interviews with government officials that have never talked like openly about it. Obviously, the guy that Robert O'Neill's in it, the guy that shot him. It was really good. It's really good. It makes you kind of sympathize with the intelligence community. And I think there's like a theory out there that they made this for that reason. Because it took 10 years. I didn't realize that. Maybe because I was younger or like was just like those were my prime years of not giving a shit about anything besides just like partying and being selfish. I didn't realize that Bin Laden, he was free for 10 years, but he was like still plotting against us.
I don't even know what is real or not anymore. So you can say that. I know what I've heard from the mainstream media, but I don't even know what's true anymore. I do want to watch his documentary. But
my point is, like, he was still alive. And, like, we think of 9/11 and it happened. And then, like, luckily we didn't have any more attacks on our soil. And, like, as we got further away from 9/11 2001, we were like, all right, nothing's going to happen to us again. And, you know, everyone clamped down.
We are in a constant state of potentially a disastrous terrorist attack. I thoroughly believe that. So many countries hate the U.S.
I agree there.
Bin Laden is one of many who are plotting against the United States.
It just reminded me that he was still alive and like he was plotting still. Where you know he was like it was a legit manhunt, and when they got him, like it didn't stop anything because I think there's still more people trying to get us, but it was really good. I would tell everyone to go out and
watch it. It's pretty funny to think about that, like in our tiny little self-centered ant-like hive mind. We don't think about the things that are actually out there and what's actually going on. Then you see this, and I was like, oh, wow, all those years I was being a stupid, selfish kid trying to get laid and find beers to drink in the forest.
Meanwhile, SEAL Team 6. SEAL Team 6 is dropping. You know, the third episode with the SEAL Team 6. I wanted to run through a wall last night for America.
Oh, I love that shit. Those guys are so.
So you're gonna love the. You got to watch it this weekend. It's probably the best weekend to watch it. Memorial Day weekend.
Speaking of the opposite of badass, I watched Untold, the Liver King documentary that's on Netflix. It's comedy, actually. So you laugh as soon as you hear it. Absolutely go watch it. Enjoy yourself. Get your popcorn. The guy is a laugh a minute. He's a total clown and super fake.
Yeah.
It's great the way they peeled back the curtain. But now we can swap. You watch that documentary. I'll watch the Bin Laden one.
I do want to watch the Liver King one. Let's get into the boxing. I have put together a list. 5 burning questions that are in the boxing world today. It's a busy time, and let's get right into it. So Naoya Inoue came out and said that he wants to fight 3 more years. He has 3 more years left in boxing, including this year. I want to close my fighting career when the time is right. I think I have about 3 years left, including this year. And it got me thinking about Inoue. Can he retire undefeated? And I thought a little further. Who's most likely to retire undefeated? Inoue, Crawford, or Usyk?
Oof, good question. We had talked about this on air because Inoue had said that on Fight Week in the fighter meetings. He didn't want to fight past the age of 35. So we have a time frame on him. I do think he loses. I don't think he retires undefeated. I think too many weight classes. I think he wants to fight the biggest, baddest guys around. He's not like Canelo, who's dodging the toughest guys out there. He's literally fighting the toughest of the tough. And if you fight the best in the world, eventually the timeline runs out. I do think he gets beat. And that's not knocking him or his skills at all. Most likely to retire undefeated. It's a toss up between Usyk and Crawford for me. Because I could see Crawford beating
it's
Canelo.
It's a cop out, bro. Come on.
I could see Crawford beating Canelo, but I don't think he's going to. So Usyk.
I like where you figured that out. And here's the thing with this question,
guys. I don't know the questions before we talk. Here,
I did pull a fast one on you when I sent you the questions. I had will Inoue retire undefeated, and I thought that's kind of a boring question. Let's spice it up a little bit. Here's the deal with this question: why it's kind of got a lot of layers to it. Inoue has the most fights remaining of the three. He's the youngest. But he's taking on the biggest risks. He's looked the most vulnerable of the three. Crawford
Crawford's probably the biggest risk. Going up 2 weight classes and fighting.
Yeah. You could say that.
At that stop. But he only has 1 fight left. Like you said, Inoue has the most opportunities to lose. You got to look at it that way. You can't look at it like, oh, he's got the most fights. So like, no, but he's got the most opportunities to lose.
Yeah, because he's getting dropped. He's making these guys into stars, his opponents. He's getting dropped. But for Crawford, he has maybe 1 or 2 fights left. Would you be surprised if Crawford win or lose, doesn't fight again after Canelo? He's not going back down to 154.
I think either way, this is the last fight.
Right. So maybe a rematch if it's a close contested fight, or definitely a rematch if he wins. So you got to factor that into it. Usyk, also 38 years old. He's the oldest of the three, and he's in the most... like the most explosive division of the three. He's a heavyweight. He could lose to Dubois. Would you be shocked if he lost to Dubois?
No, I wouldn't. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Usyk is going to win that fight, but I do think Usyk's going to keep fighting. But I don't know. Dude, at the end of this, when the dust settles, they all might lose. Now that I'm thinking about it, because I feel like Usyk's going to fight until he loses.
Yeah, I would love to see Usyk retire undefeated. I think that would just add to his lore. I don't think he cares about his lore. When I saw him at the Undisputed party, this isn't your prototypical superstar. This guy just blended right in with this party. He was chilling with everyone. I asked him how many more fights you got left. He said, maybe 1, maybe 2, maybe 3. And he had his like grin. And I was like, like this guy, like he doesn't care about like protecting his legacy and all that. But if he was to retire undefeated Usyk, I mean, then we're talking... You know, you put him in top 10, top 15 greatest fighter of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've been talking about him knocking on those doors. But I get that. Even though you've been next to him, I got that from him, that he doesn't seem the kind of guy who really cares about retiring undefeated. He's not worried about, you know, those situations. Like he's I want to fight. I want to fight. There's a lot of money for me to make. If I lose, I lose. People lose. It is what it is. I come back. You know, like that's just the mentality that I think he has. And I think a lot of these European guys have that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he were to keep fighting until he loses as well.
I think it's Usyk by process of elimination, because Crawford has the toughest fight on the schedule because.
Yeah, odds wise, he has the toughest for sure.
Usyk is the favorite. in a way, he's going to be the favorite in every fight from here on out until, I mean, yeah, he's going to be the favorite. He'd be the favorite against Bam. He'd be the favorite against Nakatani.
But then 126, I worry about him at 126, man. 126, there's some really, really good fighters up there. And he's
going to see the odds.
That weight class. I think the odds are going to be wrong. They're not really going to, they're not going to know how close the fights are.
They're not going to know how to do, like, Nick Ball versus Inoue. I would, like, you're not looking at your minus 2,500, like, we've seen for Inoue in the past.
Bro, look at Cardenas. What was Cardenas? He was like a minus 3,000. And dude,
I saw him some places.
Puts Inoue on his knees in the second round. Come on. These guys, they don't know how to call this.
Well, they don't know what Inoue, because he's a tough fighter to handicap because he's getting up there in age. He's a little vulnerable early. He has that knockout power to come back. He has those unbelievable recovery. And yeah.
And he also puts himself in bad positions. Like, he puts himself in there to get hit.
Yeah, so the sportsbooks will take a bath when Inoue loses his first fight. How about this? When and if Inoue loses his first fight, he's such a polarizing figure in boxing because he has haters as good as he is. There are people preying on his downfall, but real boxing fans, I feel like, will give him a pass. Not that we shouldn't be giving fighters passes for losing. I think if Inoue loses, I think the real boxing community will be understanding because of the weight classes he went through and the tests that he takes. Depends on who he loses to, but
well,
I think we'll be Inoue loss won't be the worst, won't be like brutal for his legacy.
I agree, and the reason for that is, and I've said this on past shows, I think that the Japanese fan base and the way they look at their fighters as warriors, and the way that the Mexican fan base looks at their fighters as warriors, Mexicans don't care about losses. Some of the Mexican greats have a ton of losses. They don't care about losses. They care about guys going out there and fighting and going out in their shield. And I think the Japanese are the same way. Yeah, listen, warriors die in battle. It's okay. It's respectable. There's honor in that. Losing in a fight is not dishonorable, especially if you fight with like a warrior. And I agree with you. I don't think it's going to hurt his legacy to come out with a loss.
Some other undefeated fighters, Devin Haney. Asterisk.
Technicality, yeah. Asterisk, nice.
Shakur Stevenson. Javonta Davis has a draw on his record. Junto Nakatani
is undefeated. Young too, though. He's so early in his career. He's got a lot to do. I could see Shakur retiring undefeated. I could see a Floyd Mayweather type run from Shakur.
That's great because it leads me to my next burning question. It's burning me. Will Shakur Stevenson show out, quote unquote, versus William Zepeda? So much made about Shakur Stevenson. It's not good enough that he just wins. He has to now perform, especially coming off the heels of 5-2, 5-3 weekend in boxing. He's facing William Zepeda, who you would think is tailor-made. Will Shakur Stevenson show out, quote unquote, versus William Zepeda?
He's not going to show out. He's going to shut out. I think he's going to win every second of that fight, and he's actually going to make Zepeda look silly at times, kind of similar to the Oscar Valdez fight. I think it's going to be a very similar fight but I think Oscar Valdez is more explosive. The issue is going to be, can Zepeda close the distance? Will Shakur stand his ground enough to allow Zepeda to let those hands go in spots? Because he's not going to let him do it all night long. But will there be spots where Shakur will be like, you know what? I'm going to let you throw because when you throw, there's going to be openings. I'm going to tag you. If he does that, I think he can shut Zepeda down pretty quick and will dominate, control him. Does he stop him? Probably not. Does he put him down? Potentially. We saw Tevin Farmer drop him. But I do think he shuts him out. I do think he makes it. I'm looking at like again, an Oscar Valdez virtuoso performance where you're like, yeah, this guy's the goods.
If he drops Zepeda, that will get people off his back.
Yep.
That will be, if he shuts out 11-1 Zepeda, drops him. It's very similar to the Oscar Valdez fight. Good call there, because he dropped Valdez in the sixth, 117, yep. 110, 118, 109, 118, 109. That is a very underrated win for Shakur Stevenson. This guy doesn't get, I'm not turning this into a Shakur Stevenson sympathy segment, but like Nakatia, Herring, Valdez, Conceição, De Los Santos, he didn't look great, but he still won.
Bo, Conceição's still a world-class guy. He's still...
Like, to say that this guy's resume isn't up to par, it's a sneaky good resume. And he also has Joette Gonzalez in 2019, Christopher Diaz at the time, 2019. It's a good resume. It's not like he's still missing that big fight, and he wants it desperately.
Yeah, and Oscar Valdez, I think I've always said that was his... that really breakout performance where people are like, oh dude, he's able to do what he does to all these other guys like this. Cause I think I've told this on the podcast before. It was after the Nakatila fight. Bob Arum grabs me. He goes, what'd you think of the fight? I'm like, yeah, it was a little bit of a stinker. And Bob asked me, he's like, what do you think we do next with Shakur? I'm like, just put him in with the best. He's going to do the same thing, Bob. He's going to do the same thing to them that he's doing to these guys. He's like, but it'll carry more weight like that. You just kind of nodded and you're just like, And then, the Oscar de Valdez
another
fight.
Gummy.
Exactly what he did. Yeah. He popped another gun. He had a tequila, ate a steak, and then, life goes on for Bob.
He just went back and forth with Jake Paul, which was...
I saw that.
Jake's reply.
I didn't read the reply. I was
I got to pull
the
it up right now. You got to be careful when you go at Jake Paul because the guy knows how to... One thing about Jake is he knows how to, reply, and he'll do it succinctly. Torch you in a paragraph. Bob Arum says Jake Paul is not a real fighter. Jake Paul is smarter than you and me combined. He's not interested in fighting somebody that would really give him a whipping. Jake replies, you woman hating geriatric. You got dropped by ESPN. You lost Shakur, Teofimo, and Crawford because you're greedy. Your team is being sued for doing business with criminals. Keep my name out of your dentures and keep pushing Nico Ali Walsh, who is a quote unquote real fighter, right? Ethered.
He goes scorched earth, dude. And that's
he got
that's
him
the
good
Bob
there.
Father. That's the Bob father. Did he though? Does Bob care? No. Does anyone care? No. No one cares.
No. Still funny. Some
he
bars.
Very funny. He put it together nicely, but it's Bob. You can't say anything about Bob.
Back to Shakur. The Valdez win, probably his best win, 2022. But then he follows it up. He gets stripped of his 130-pound belt. I forgot about that. Stevenson stripped because he missed weight against Conceição. Then he goes up to 135.
Shit, I forgot about that.
Yeah, then he goes up to 135. The De Los Santos fight set him back. The Artem fight set him back. The failed negotiations set him back. His Twitter activity has set him back. But I feel like he has an opportunity here. I tweeted this out last week. Shakur retweeted it. He loves when you talk good about him. But if you talk bad about him, he'll go at you. This guy has told me, tweeted at me numerous times, shut the hell up, Dan. And I hear you. But when I said that this guy has an opportunity, Shakur has an opportunity on July 12th to get ahead of the others, his contemporaries, to get into that discussion, to get into the elite discussion, because those fights were not exciting. It's tough because Shakur has had some pretty boring fights himself, but he has a guy who's tailor-made for him in Cepeda, who's only going to come forward. If Shakur drops him, if he stops him late, if he drops him and then shuts him out, Shakur's going to come out looking great out of all this, and then we can really push for him to fight some of these elites. Would not be shocked if he starts debating going up to 140 if that tank chase doesn't come to fruition. So I think there's a golden opportunity for Shakur. I think he has to show out. I think he has to stand and trade a little bit more. We've had this discussion. I don't know if he will. It's easier said than done. But yeah, huge opportunity. It's all there right in front of him in New York.
Like, I don't think he needs to stand and trade. It's like I said, I think if he stands his ground and looks for the opening
ground
while Zepeda is letting things go, I think, that would be a smart thing to do at times when the time is right. Don't do it too early because Zepeda could be dangerous early on. But he'll feel that as he goes. He's a very intuitive fighter. He feels how guys are. He's catching him on the elbows, catching him on the gloves. This guy really hit that hard, and then go from there. But yeah, I agree with you, Dan. I think this is a big opportunity with a fight that we've wanted for a long time. It's definitely lost luster with the two Tevin Farmer fights, but it's still a good fight. I'm still looking forward to it. I still think stylistically, Zepeda could potentially push Shakur at times to see him step up to that level, that next level that we want.
You know, it's funny. It's like, the fight did kind of it lose a little bit of its luster. But when it gets announced, I get excited again. When they face each other off, I get excited again. July 12th, I'll be tuned in, ready to go. Hopefully there. It's because it's like in my backyard. It's right here in Queens. Like, that's going to be exciting stuff. And that whole card is really good. You saw the Edgar Berlanga press conference with Hamza Shirez. I'll tell you, Hamza Shirez is a breath of fresh air, you know, wearing a three-piece suit, not talking a lot of crap. Berlanga was talking all the shit, gun signs, all that stuff, which I didn't find too cool. But Shirez called him a sausage. He said, back home in the UK, we would refer to you as a sausage.
See, I don't know that term. I don't know that term from the British vernacular, but
the Brits.
I wonder what that. I mean, I assume I know what it means, but Verlanga's comeback was god awful.
Would you call him a D-eater?
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, here we go.
He heard sausage, like New Yorker. Yeah,
right, right. It's back, just like put it together. I'm in sixth
sexual
grade.
Innuendo.
Here's my guy, but that one fell flat.
I will say this about Berlanga. He is playing the heel role. I would say he's probably top heel in boxing besides Teofimo. He's just a lightning rod, Berlanga. But I do like this fight a lot. I think that I'm surprised they put Shiraz, they're putting him in there with Berlanga.
I'm surprised both sides. I'm surprised both sides.
The money must be astronomical.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it is.
Berlanga has been showing off the money that he made, the astronomical money he made for Canelo quite a bit. So,
well, it's another reason people hate him. Like,
that boy's going to be caking.
They don't like him because there's people that don't think he's that good or like entitled or like he shouldn't have got the Canelo fight. Then he comes out on the press tour or whatever you want to call it, the victory tour for the loss. He's got jewelry, you know, he's got money. Obviously, he's going to make a ton of money here. Really good fight. He wins. He beats Shiraz. Another guy has an unbelievable opportunity in front of him. He beats Shiraz. That's a solid win. That's his best win by far. Gets these haters off his back, sets himself up for big time fights at 168, whether it's Plant, Charlo's back in the mix at 168. Dude, he wants this Canelo rematch. That's like,
the haters
stop.
Ain't going anywhere, bro. He needs the haters. Going anywhere. He needs the haters. He wants the haters. He loves the haters. The haters are paying for the gas bill on those cars that he has. Haters are fine. Haters are fine. If you're going to be the heel, you got to embrace the hate.
Yeah, you should. And there's a market for it. Love that card as a whole. July 12th, Alberto Puello versus Matias David Morrell. Rito Tsutsumi is going against Eric Hanley, who I watched fight on an MVP card, who gave Juana Walton some tough rounds. So, yeah, and it's at the Louis Armstrong Stadium in Queens. Next burning question is Teofimo Lopez making a mistake targeting Boots Ennis?
I think yes. But, all right, let me say why I think yes. I've been around both these guys physically. Boots Ennis is a different sized human than Teofimo Lopez. Teofimo Lopez is small for 140. Boots is gigantic. One of the biggest 47-pounders I've ever seen. And I take it as a bridge too far. And when you're talking about Boots, you're not talking about a plodding puncher. This is not Ruslan Provotnikov. This is a guy who is super slick, fast hands, good body puncher, dynamic, reactive, everything. When you've got a guy who's that good and bigger, it's the classic good little man versus good big man. The good big man wins. So that's ultimately how I see it. It's hard to see it any other way when you first look at it. But then I just think historically, the way that Teofimo and his father approach the guys they've called out two other fighters, well, three, including Crawford, obviously didn't get that one. But the two fighters they called out that they got, Lomachenko and Josh Taylor, when Josh Taylor was at the height and Lomachenko was still very viable. I mean, very, very, still top notch. He beat both of them and he really beat them. It wasn't like,
But was Josh Taylor at his height or was he like...
He might have been just over it.
We didn't know. That fight was heading into that fight. Some people were picking Taylor.
Everyone picked Taylor, except for you, if you remember. All the boxing analysts picked Taylor.
I don't remember. I got to pull up the tapes for that.
No, you did. You were the only one who picked Teofimo. But there was like they pulled like 23 analysts and it was like 23 for Taylor and then Dan Canobio. But
that's right.
I don't know, man. They're crazy. They're crazy in a way that doesn't seem some crazy all the time. You know, it's crazy until it's not.
Crazy like a fox. Lopez's.
Crazy like a fox. So maybe they see something in Boots that stylistically matches up because their boxing IQ is very high. Man, they see things. So
you know who also saw something? Mikey Garcia against Errol Spence. And this was Mikey Garcia after every round.
Yeah. And he lost 11 out of 12 rounds.
Dude, that was the most. I was ringside for that at Jerry World. That was the most one-sided beatdown. I saw a stat come up like Spence landed 89 punches in the final two rounds and Garcia landed 75 the whole fight. Like that's a lopsided beatdown.
Spence also outboxed him too. It's like what Mikey was supposed to be able to do, he completely outboxed him too. Like
well,
it was
Spence
just like,
took it. I was around him for that lead up doing stuff for Fox. Spence took offense to the fact that everyone said you're just too big. You're gonna beat him just because you're too big. Spence is like, I'm gonna beat him because I can outbox him.
Spence used to do that though. He would want to beat you at what you're good at. So he did that to Mikey Garcia.
I love that in a fighter.
He did that to Sean Porter. He fought Sean. He could have boxed Sean.
That was
very boxable.
Bloodbath.
Yep. Kell Brook boxed Sean. You can box Sean. If you're physically strong and you can punch like Kell Brook, you can box Sean. Mm-hmm. Spence was like, no. He wants to meet in the middle. We want to fight head on. That fight was sick. That's just the way that he liked to fight. And Danny Garcia was another one. Like he didn't. Oh, Danny wants to counter me. If I stand in front of him, he's going to hit me? Okay.
Damn.
I'll do that and I'll beat you.
I'm thinking of Prime Spence right now, man. Prime Spence was a force.
Dude, he was a marauder. He was a marauder. You would know. Prime Spence was a nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
Man, you could do a whole, like, it's too close. His career is, I don't know if it's over or not, but like the look back on his career is going to be crazy because he was, him and Wilder, 1A, 1B, for PBC's investment on what they wanted out of the future. Like he was huge. And then that crash changed everything. What a wild career. But back to Teofimo. There are strong rumors of this Teofimo Boots fight in October. At 147, Teofimo wants to become, you know, a champion in the third weight class, ring magazine titles, all that stuff. I agree with you. When I think of Teofimo and him and some of these, he's just in this weird spot where his body is filling out and he probably has to go to 147, but he's just not big. Like he's small. Like him and Haney, I think, is the fight. Him and Tank, I think, is the fight. Yeah. Him going up to fighting a Crawford, like a Boots, looks like a freaking middleweight against, what's his name? Stanionis. Like it's just a bridge too far. As much as I can't stand Teofimo as of late because of all the stuff outside the ring, I do respect him because I do think he wants this. Like, I don't think he's just like doing it for clout. I think if they make this fight, he takes it.
He's not Ryan Garcia calling out Benavidez just because he fought over the weekend. Like he's actually
Ryan was he was in the throes of some mental episode when Benavidez. He was naming everyone under the sun.
Well, people think Teofimo's living in the throes of a mental episode.
Well, he's trying. He's manufacturing. Like Ryan Garcia was in a legit mental distress episode. Yeah, Teofimo is trying to act like he's like he's trying hard to be Ryan Garcia right now, and he's failing miserably. Tim Bradley, is he still do stuff with Pro Box TV?
Not as of late, but okay. I just saw Tim a couple weeks ago.
He put out a video. I think it looked like he was at like his kid's soccer game or something. He said Tim Bradley thinks Boots is all wrong for Teofimo. He likes Teofimo over Boots, and he went into great detail. He said Karen gave Boots issues. Teofimo can do what Karen did. And it was very adamant, Bradley, very adamant that Teofimo can beat Boots. Interesting.
See, this is where I'm coming with the family, the Lopez, father-son duo. When they call guys out, there's a reason. There's a reason. You know, there are things, you know, we've seen from Boots not look great in the Chigadzian fight. I mean, Chigadzian, I don't think that's the way that Teo fights. He fought a very physical fight and made it ugly and grabbing, and he's not going to be able to do that against a bigger guy.
Right, I agree.
Listen, I we say it all the time in this area. I know whatever he's doing outside of the ring, whatever that is, inside the ring, Teofimo Lopez, at his best, is one of the best fighters in the world. I mean, he is a sublime talent, and it's a beautiful thing to watch when he's on. He's not on all the time, but when he's on, damn, he's good.
I want to watch someone when they're on. Like I all I have is this taste about of these bad performances.
Yeah.
Like I want to see Teofimo on. Like I want to see that as a fan. Like can't stand him outside the ring right now, but in the ring, you're right. When he's
Josh Taylor fight, dude. Yeah, when exactly. we were ringside for that because we had our fight party the night before. Man, we were watching this. And we were like, we're looking at you like, whoa,
yeah.
Whoa. Who is this guy? This is the guy that we saw fight Lomachenko. Like just dialed in.
But yeah, like you bring up the point with Boots, like he's not indestructible. We're like one fight ago, we were talking about, is this guy like overrated? Is this guy peaking? Is this guy, can he make 147? Like, I don't know. Like Boots, it would be interesting if he would take the fight. I think he would because it's big money. It's not the first fight I thought Boots would take, big fight. You know, he's dead set on becoming undisputed at 147, but a lot of the other guys aren't participating. The other guys aren't cooperating. Mario Barros is fighting Manny Pacquiao, for God's sakes. Norman is going up against Jin Sasaki. So he might look at this like, all right, Turkey, let me get into this Turkey sweepstakes Boots. Let me, I'll go over
make
to Saudi Arabia.
Make some money while we make these guys sweat. These other champions are going to have to fight me eventually. Let me go make some money in the meantime.
There is a path for Teofimo to beat Boots. It would have to be the counter. You have to be like so on with the counters.
The jab, the counters, because
and Boots will come forward.
Yes, Boots is not very deceptive on his way in. He's got that Philly tough guy, tough gym, hard nose. I'm gonna get in, and we're gonna go back and forth and bang it out kind of thing. But Teofimo doesn't have to play that game. He can stick that jab, step around, let those hands go, counter from the outside. But I actually think Boots is a lot better than we've seen. I think that he's got a lot more in his bag. And I've talked to guys who've been in the gym with him. Our guy, PJ Prentice Brewer, he says that in the gym, he's something super special. So I'm in the process of thinking that, or in the class of people who are thinking that Boots is actually way better than we've seen. And he's going to be around for a very long time.
I hope so. People will tune in to watch Boots beat up Teofimo Lopez. If you have an issue with Teofimo over the last couple of months, it's all the makings there. The promotion will be interesting. Boots ain't going to talk a lot. He's not going to say
will
much
lead it,
of anything.
Which is fine.
It's the daring to be great narrative. It's... has everything that you need there. Devin Haney has called for a fight with Teofimo. Said, I'm tired of your racist remarks. I want to fight you. That's the fight that we were talking about last week. And that's the one I think naturally, if they were to both stay or do like a catch weight 144. Like, I want to see Haney Teofimo more than I want to see Teofimo Boots.
I said that night. I was like, I want to see that fight. Both of them, you know, obviously, you know, we talked ad nauseum about that card and how not spectacular it was. But as soon as that fight was done, I was like, I don't want to see Ryan and Haney again. I want to see Haney and Teofimo. That's the fight that I want now. After watching that night, I was like, yep, that's the fight I want next. I want Tio and Haney. I think they've got plenty of history. I think stylistically, it can be a fun fight. I think the build-up will be fantastic. Yeah, make that fight.
Yeah, and Bill Haney is also called – Bill Haney's on like – have you been following along with him? He's on a
– I saw him on Hitchens page or they had an interaction at the gym. I thought that was cool.
So he's pulling for his son. Obviously he's unbelievable when it comes to that, Bill Haney, of riding for his son, being a promoter, manager, dad, trainer. He's taken to Twitter. He went on Ariel Helwani's show. He did a cigar talk with Najee, and he is now painting this narrative that we were wrong. Like, our eyes are untrained. That was outstanding, what he did against Jose Ramirez. Like, we're the ones that are wrong. That was the sweet science going into his accomplishments. He tweeted out, Floyd didn't, Sugar Ray didn't, Oscar didn't, Pacquiao, Canelo, Tank, Shakur didn't either. Devin Haney at 26, 32-0, 7 champs beat, 3 unified champs beat, undisputed at 135. Chase greatness until greatness has to chase you. Hashtag Riyadh season.
That's a crazy group of names to put yourself into. Crazy.
Crazy like a fox, Bill Haney, as well.
Yeah, but also, how many of those guys were under the age of 35?
Oh, that was the one knock on Haney. It's like, yeah, I love Haney's resume, and I think it's the best of his contemporaries, but like,
yeah,
we'll poke holes in it all day. I think the only guy, what's his name? Kambosos was the only guy under 30. He was 29. I'm horrible with ages.
And Kambosos is Kambosos. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a tough, putting yourself in with those names for me. It's hard for me not to just, because I'm not a guy who likes to poke holes if I don't have to, but you leave me no choice. Well, you talk about Sugar Ray Leonard and Floyd.
Bro, like Dan Raphael tweeted, before Leonard was 26, he beat Duran, Hearns, and Wilfred Benitez. What are you smoking, Bill? He didn't say that, but I added that in.
Yeah.
But before Haney, like the last year, you wouldn't be able to find, like besides Bill Haney, I was in the discussion as one of Devin Haney's biggest defenders. Like I had people coming at me hard. Like, I can't believe you're defending Haney. I can't believe this, that, and the other. Like, he's suing his guy. He looked horrible. I did understand the hate that he was getting. But when the performance against Ramirez just angered me so much, and I was just so pissed off by that performance, that now I'm looking at these Bill Haney tweets, and they are ridiculous. And, you know, that is his resume. It is a freaking awesome resume if you just look at it isolated. If you isolate it at age 26, the things that he's accomplished, especially compared to Ryan Garcia, compared to some of his others. I think Teofimo is up there, too, with accolades. But, yeah, it's becoming hard to defend Haney because of that last performance. Another burning question is, like, will he ever recover from that? Is he going to fight like he did against Ramirez in his next fight?
Well, apparently, from what Bill said, there's no need to recover because that was the sweet science, right? Isn't that what he was saying?
Yeah. Like,
there's nothing to fix. So expect more of that, apparently, which isn't true because Devin did not fight like that in the past. That was not the way that Devin fought. He was not that flighty. Wasn't on skates all night the way he was against Ramirez. You were defending Devin Haney. I've always defended Devin. I like Devin, and I understand.
You didn't like the lawsuit, which is fine.
I didn't like this lawsuit, but dude, I'm just a fighter speaking. And again, I don't know how much does Devin really want to do that. I think it's his dad and his team that is doing this. And I understand his father goes to bat for his son. I can appreciate that. Don't like all the moves, but so what? But I think when Devin's at his best, man, when he's behind that jab, the pro gray Devin Haney, Devin Haney fought Lomachenko. You know, people argue that fight that he didn't win that fight. Doesn't matter. He fought great that night. He looked really, really good against a very, very tough legend. I was there that night. I was in the room. It was a phenomenal performance. So
right, pull up that video and look at him standing in the pocket.
Yep, pushing Lomachenko back, blasting him with body shots, staying in the pocket, getting hit. Shaking his head, standing his ground. It was a good fight. It was a very entertaining fight.
Oh, that fight was really good. And I don't care what Bill says. Sometimes boxing is simple with your eyes. And you can the Haney that we saw there and the Haney we saw in Pro Gray, and then the Haney we saw in Ramirez and the Haney we saw against Garcia. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. Like, I understand what you're doing. Like, you're pretty much a politician right at this point, Bill.
Yes.
Like, we're not picking up what you're putting down. But I know what you're doing. You're doing your job. Like, you're literally like doing your job. So we'll see what happens. Will it be Teofimo Haney? Will it be Teofimo Boots? Teofimo, you better be careful what you ask for, because we have a financier now in boxing. Yeah, who will make that fight October. They're looking at that one. Burning question number four. What does Amanda Serrano need to do to secure a win versus Katie Taylor in their trilogy? They are fighting on July 11th in Madison Square Garden on Netflix. Amanda is down 0-2 in this trilogy. First fight, I thought, was a draw, or I could see a path for Taylor. Second fight, I thought Amanda Serrano won. Third fight, what is Serrano going to have to do to get her hand raised? What does she have to do differently in the third fight?
She's gonna knock her out, dude. Can I just be honest? Like they're not.
That will be nuts.
That's it. He's got an
exclamation point.
Yeah, she's got to drop her. She's got to hurt her bad. I mean, she's hurt her. She's hurt Katie before. Both fights, hurt Katie. But Katie's a dog, and she knows how to recover. And she's Katie's phenomenal. They're both awesome. But I think in order to separate herself, she's got to. Exactly what separated her career from Katie's is what's going to win her this fight, if she is to win, and that's her power. Amanda Serrano is gifted with power that women just don't have. We have not seen a woman who hits as hard, gets as many stoppages the way that Amanda has, and she's going to need to use that for Katie Taylor. And I'm sorry, man. It might have to go that far. It's one of those, I gotta knock them out, they get a draw kind of situation, because the judge is just not going her way.
Well, here's the thing. It's 2-minute rounds. And the first time these two women were on the stage at their press conference about a month ago, and it was the first time I saw them talk shit to each other, and I was captivated by it, because there was apparently a handshake deal after the second fight that it was going to be 3-minute rounds. If it's 3-minute rounds, I think Serrano could stop Taylor. I mean, she staggered her in both fights, the fifth round of the first fight, and I believe the first round of the second fight. If there was an extra minute, I think Serrano could have got the job done. But it's not. It's 2-minute rounds. That's one thing that Katie Taylor got out of this negotiation. I mean, she got a lot of money, and that's why she's taking this fight. But it's in Serrano's backyard. It's a third fight, which is crazy when you're up 2-0. But she's like, I'm getting my 2-minute rounds because I'm getting something out of this negotiation. It's an MVP event.
I don't blame her at all.
Like, I as bad as I want to see 3 minutes, because I want to see these women.
Katie doesn't have to give that up. Like you said, she's 2-0. She's not the girl.
She's 2-0. She's the champion. She's undisputed. She's the one. She's every, like, Katie's on paper, like traditional negotiations, traditional routes of boxing. Katie would have so much more, but this isn't traditional. Women's boxing isn't traditional. They have to kind of change things around. There wouldn't be a trilogy in regular boxing if it's 2-0. Most definitely wouldn't be in their backyard, but the MVP knows that the biggest ticket gate will be at Madison Square Garden because of all the Puerto Ricans and Irish, and because of how successful the first fight was. I went back and looked at the stats, Chris. Serrano threw 624 punches in the first fight. She threw 700 plus in the second fight. Jabs, first fight, 2 of 150. Two jabs Serrano landed in the first fight.
Two?
Katie Taylor landed one. I thought there was a mistake in the database. I thought we made a mistake at CompuBox. Three combined jabs landed.
That's a phone book fight. They just went to war.
The second fight, Serrano boxed more. She threw over 100 jabs. And I thought she won more demonstratively. Besides knocking her out, should Serrano box more? Should she try to beat Taylor at her own game, a la Errol Spence? If you're not going to get the 3 minutes, the 2 minutes is really hard to get the stoppage.
Yeah.
So should she
2 minutes
take
is really hard to separate when girls are this good. They're both good. 2 minutes is not enough time to separate who's better. So
they're on the Mount Rushmore of women's boxers.
I think I said it, and I was calling it a female fight, and I'm just like, I can't score female fights.
They're very hard to score.
It's just not enough time. So much happens in that last minute of a round. That's where people really separate who is in control of the round. So I don't know. It's just it's a flawed system. I'm glad these women are getting attention. I'm glad they're getting money. But in terms of what it's going to take, I don't know. She's already tried multiple different ways.
Why'd they do 12
twos, 10 threes, whatever. I mean, it's a big difference, but there needs to be a change. The system is flawed.
It's only a 20-minute fight, and I'd watch them fight for 12 threes. But, Taylor's not going to do that. But I think Serrano, I'm curious what her game plan is. I'm curious, because the second fight, you could see her game plan was to, like, just box more, use that power when you can. But maybe she'll really utilize that jab in this third fight.
Who's fresher at this point? I think they're both well.
I think it's even.
I think they're both well over their prime, and I think that we're getting such a good fight because they're both. I don't think they would. I don't think they could beat the other girls anymore. But they put on great fights with each other, so obviously they're fighting each other. So usually the fresher person would be better in the boxing style. If it goes out there and box. So is Amanda the fresher person that can go out there and box? Is her footwork going to be a little fresher and crisper? Because she got tired in both those fights too. So
yeah, she did. She cut the second fight.
Yeah, it was bad.
Brutal.
It was bad. Brutal.
That cut doesn't happen.
That fight also should have been stopped from that cut. That thing was brutal. If it wasn't that magnitude of fight, they stopped that. 100% stopped that. And go to the scorecards, which she might have won from that too.
The good thing about being in Texas that night. Yeah, they stopped that fight, and then Jake and Paul did what they did. I would have put a different look on the night. I think Taylor and Serrano stole the night. And, man, I can't wait for this. I know it's not like – it's a big event. I'm going to be in there at MSG on July 11th. It's going to be really loud. It's a welcomed fight on the fight schedule. it's refreshing because women's boxing has been kind of forgotten about. MVP is scooping up all the women. Holly Holm, all of them. Caroline Dubois is not signed with MVP, and she's at 140. Good. I think she could be. I think she's the heir apparent. You know, as much as like really we think maybe Bumgarner, Dubois is legit.
Yeah, I was really impressed. Like
Dubois
with
Bumgarner.
Good fight. Both ladies can punch.
Dubois Cameron.
Cameron's good too. I like Cameron. I really like Cameron. She can fight.
Chantel Cameron is 34. She's time an MVP.
I guess women can they can fight later at a higher level. Older, that is.
She fought twice last year. She hasn't fought since November of last year. So I'm guaranteed they'll put her on an MVP card in the very near future. I mean, they have to. They've signed so many women, and they all have to fight. They're going to be fighting on these prospect shows, I assume. They're fighting the Jake Paul events. They're going to be fighting on their own events. A lot of women's boxing coming up. Final question, burning question. This is a fun one, Chris. I didn't put this in the notes. Do you think boxing should be taught in schools?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why?
No question about it. I mean, it always was, and everyone's
where?
Got these.
Not my school.
I mean,
in Huntington,
no,
they were scrapping.
I'm sure in the 40s and 50s, but there used to be boxing colleges. There used to be there should be martial arts training in school. No question about it.
I'm not against it. These kids are gonna fight anyway.
Yes,
you know. So if you could learn how to defend yourself, get in shape, but how far are we going? Is it part of a gym curriculum? Is it like an after school program? Is it mandatory? Like that's my further questions here.
I think it should be introed in physical education class, and then there should be after school programs that if you enjoyed that during gym class, the very basic cursory event, you know, introduction. You want to pursue it. You have an after school class. You get into any fights, you're out of the program.
Like fights outside.
Yep.
I like that.
You get
rule.
Fights in school. You get fights rule. In school. Because if you know how to fight, you don't want to fight. That's usually how it goes. That's where martial arts always taught me when I was younger. Once I got into martial arts, I don't want to fight anymore because you learn that you can be very, very dangerous and people get hurt really bad in fighting. And you learn that you don't want to do that. And also, you know, you have the skill that you can hurt people. You're not supposed to want to use that. So that would be the rule for the F school program. You get into a fight outside of the program, then you're out of the program.
I like that rule because I can see the detractors. I can see some of the other teachers, you know, maybe in the art.
Oh,
wing.
Now we're going to get these kids dangerous and they're going to hurt each other.
Right. Saying, you know, maybe these other teachers being, wait a second. We're seriously teaching hand to hand combat in school. But I think the pros outweigh the cons.
We teach wrestling. Wrestling is super. Yo, if you can wrestle,
I wrestled, bro.
If you can wrestle and you get into a fight, you can really hurt kids, and you're
wrestling.
Good at it, and it's very easy.
It's a crazy thing to think about. Looking back, like in junior high when I signed up, it was like after school, me and my friends would put on our sweats, go into the wrestling room, and just go at it with each other.
Kill each other for 2 hours, and then do like the most insane conditioning workouts ever. Not drink any water. And then yeah, just
wrestling
dream about twisting people's heads off.
Like, yeah, then meet day would come, and I'd run out there in my singlet, and I would be terrified because all the girls would be there, and
everybody would be watching.
Literally, all eyes on you. That giant mat in the middle of the gym.
Did you wrestle in high school or middle school?
I did 7th and 8th grade. 8th grade MVP. Thank you very much. Nice. 14-1. 7th grade, I was just introduced to it. You know, my dad's a wrestler. My brother was a wrestler. So I was like, I'm going to give it a try. I liked it, but I just didn't like it enough. It's a commitment and a half to do that. Yeah. I knew how tough it was going to be from middle school to that jump to like JV and varsity wrestling was massive. Mm-hmm. And I saw my brother cutting weight. I know you probably were too, like not eating Thanksgiving meals. And it's way different than any other sport.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So I quit.
Yeah, no. So I didn't start till high school. I was all state. I won Catholic States, won the entire tournament. My senior year, I was like 36-6.
Wow.
I was good.
What
really
weight did you wrestle at?
My senior year, 130. Junior year, 125. I was captain my senior year. Was all state, MVP of the. My girlfriend and I were both MVP of the what do they call it? The season, like the winter sports, you know, in high school. So we were both on the podium together. She played basketball.
Well, our school, we had a girl. We had two girls on the
wrestling team.
Yeah, middle school. And that caused issues.
I went to a Catholic school, but that was not allowed.
It caused so much issues. Yeah. There was like a PTA meeting. It got approved. I watched these two girls beat boys on their home mat and ruin them. Like they're out there somewhere right now, some kid who lost to the two girls on our team that are still carrying scars from that day. Like, it became big deal. Like, oh shit, like you're wrestling a girl today. You better beat her. And the girl, Alicia Napoleon.
Oh, yeah. You know her. Yeah, yeah, Alicia. Yeah, I know Alicia.
She's a professional boxer.
World champion boxer now, too.
She was, I was seventh grade. She was eighth grade. We went to the same middle school. She was on my wrestling team. Whipping women is an understatement, bro. She was just suplex city, pinning them. Kids were crying. The boys were crying.
She's not a little girl. She wasn't a little girl in high school either, right?
She was big, bro. She was wrestling big. Yeah. She lost a bunch, but when she pinned this one guy. He was crying. His friends were laughing. And we were this is a crazy experiment.
I wrestled a girl junior year at a tournament in Virginia. And we ended up happening. It would happen. You know, so with the lighter weights, when you were like under 130 pounds, like you'd wrestle girls every once in a while, especially when you went to other tournaments. Because, you know, like I said, we were Catholic school, but we went and wrestled at private public tournaments all over the East Coast. And my friends were like, my teammates are like,
talk about a no win.
Don't come back here with a loss.
It's a no win, man. It was crazy. No win.
Yeah.
Long story short, yeah, I do think there should be some type of boxing. I like how you said it. Like, introduce it in gym. Like, big ass gloves. You know, the basics.
No contact in gym. Shadow boxing, movement. You know, mirror work. You know, even shadow boxing with each other at a distance kind of thing. Maybe hitting pads a little bit. And then, like, hey, if you want to do more than this, we got an after school program. We got our coach who comes in. It's
I love that.
You know, 2 hours long. And, you know, we'll go over the finer points of the sweet science.
If you guys like that, 3 o'clock.
Tape study, tape review. Like
3 o'clock. Meet us back. Yeah, and that one gym teacher is kind of crazy. Is the boxing coach.
Always. Always.
Love
He's got
that.
An eye patch.
Yeah.
Lost my eye in Nam.
Yeah, that was usually our wrestling coach was kind of crazy. We had a crazy wrestling coach. Awesome stuff. All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode. It was a little wacky this one, but we went to the topics and we had a good time doing it. Can't always be everything going on in the sport. It's like, as much as we're getting good fights, there's been a lot of lulls this year. There's a lot of lulls. Like, we have nothing this weekend, really.
There hasn't been lulls. It's just that we the last 2 years, we got so spoiled. We had like the last 2 years were like breakneck speed all year long. And then this year it's like, it's back to more of a normal pace, still getting really good fights. But yeah, now we consider them lulls. It's so fast we get trained into expectation.
I would wish the boxing schedule people, there isn't such a thing, would kind of spread them out. Like July,
you mean
19th. Like, what is it? We're just like, we literally just pray, because none of these promoters call each other up and say, oh, you're doing a card on July 19th? Oh, okay. We'll do ours. No, we're just going to go. Yeah. We're going to freaking bull in a China shop, push it through. July 19th, three different fight cards.
Let's all cannibalize each other. Why not?
Right. Hate that. I guess May 31st is one I guess people will be tuned into. They should be. And that's the Charlo Plant doubleheader to see how Charlo looks. I mean, it's on Prime. That's kind of the next biggish fight on the schedule. But that's it. We'll be back later on this week with more hijinks. Hope you enjoyed the show. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.
T Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.